they're counting in every language. This is effectively the trials and tribulations of trying to design graphical assets, whether they're post-technical documentation, an illustration of a comic, or a button for a website, and trying to do this with an open source toolchain, with the free software apps we have, and trying to make it as easy as possible for people that don't have expertise with those tools, even though they're freely available, or people who just, you know, don't care about it, but they're more than happy to edit what they know. So, you need mates. Okay, this is the workflow when it comes to publishing for books. This is technical documentation focus, but this is the workflow that writers and artists deal with when it comes to writing books for every language. So what you've got is, you've got the writer dealing with DocLookXML, and he's crunching out his concept for what will be this clustering sort of architecture or some sort of whacked out concept that he's got to do in encryption. And he goes to the artist with maybe a sketch or a brief or a concept on, look, I really need to illustrate this. I don't think I'm getting the message across to people, and I really need to show them maybe where this piece of technology sits in topology, or where this process happens. So, you know, that conference happens and that message is understood. So what will happen is the artist will create an SVG file, and during that SVG creation, we have the problem of where you put your text, how you lay out your design, making considerations for the languages to come. We have a great tool. This is Gnome DocuTools, XML2PO. What it will do is, simultaneously, you can convert the DocBook XML to a PO file to be easily read, and also the Inkscape SVG to a PO file. This means that if the translator is familiar helping out in an open source project with KBabel or GTranslator, they can simply just grab this PO file, check it out, make their alterations to language specific to them, then check it back in, and we can allow our tools to generate those changes as if they went into the illustration application themselves and made the translations. Now, it's not as easy as it sounds. Things do bugger up a lot. Brazilian Portuguese, friendly, but it's just so long. So we're going to cover the considerations to be made when it comes to that. If you're simplified Chinese speaking, I love you because you've got one word per word. That's just brilliant. Okay. So what happens is XML2PO will create a bunch of files, and it'll create one file. You'll copy that file to each language locale you have. So you'll just rename the file en-us, ja-jp underscore actually, and send that off to the translators of each language. I'm inferring that you don't have some sort of proprietary tool chain for managing this software development, Rosetta. Then you put that translated language PO file back into your DocBook XML. Translated, okay, yeah, that's for doing books. Okay, so we've got a build machine, and this build machine is effectively just the machine that has Inkscape on it. Not everybody has Inkscape, so this Inkscape, this will do two things. We will render the DocBook into FO by converting that, and we'll also convert the XML with XML to PO back again into the SVG, and the Teak and Fop will pull out a PDF, and if you just use Inkscape with its PNG export or the Teak with PNG export, you can then use XML2 to DocBook. If you want, you put some XSL to make it nice and valid, because the current XML2 HTML output is atrocious. Okay, so you need SVG. And we're going to be creating custom designer graphics. This is stuff that is not boring. We're not just going to be putting a string of text on a page amidst another graphic. We're going to try and integrate the design, or integrate a brand or a style or an aesthetic into a graphic, and then have that translated and see the accommodations we need to make in a free software architecture that you might not have to encounter with proprietary alternatives, or might not even consider, because not many people translate their designs. And this is very useful for people all around the world. So, considerations. You have things within the SVG technology that will take care of design work for you. We've got flow text, we've got alignment, we have the font family that you have to use, choosing a typeface, and we have letter spacing, which if you want to cram a bit more in. It really depends. If you know the typefaces you're dealing with, or you know the content authors of people contributing back, whether or not they're, you know, greedy or polite with how they translate, you might need to make these considerations, and I'll go into the technical implementations later. So, also translators, making sure that when they get a PO file, they know not to say g'day to their mates when it's a two-word translation, so very small strings of text. And also white space considerations, how to design. John and Mental covered yesterday in their comic talk that you actually design with the intent of having white space being filled with the content you have when doing a comic. This is much the same with diagrams, it's much the same with doing illustrations for book covers and whatnot. So, okay, no docu-tells. Early last year, I came into actually started using XML to PO and stuff, and I gotta say, it saved my sanity. You have no idea what crazy Perl crap we were using. Not even gonna talk about it.
I have no idea.
Okay, well, it's worse that somebody thought that it would be possible. This is the small string that we're going to do. This is assuming that the first PO file you want to create is a translation for US English. And the SVG file we have here, in this case, is called chrome.svg. So what you've done is you've created a picture called chrome.svg that has made all these nice design considerations, and now you want it to be translated. So this string here, if you just chuck it through Bash or try and rewrite it as a script, will create your first PO file, and that's great. So we'll copy this PO file, we'll send it out as every language that we have. These are 23 languages that are technically used internally and stuff, but really, if you just have a couple that you want to support with your software, or maybe if you're just running a website where you have three languages that are important to what you're doing, you'll just use those. So translate. This part I can't help you with. In fact, I can't even help myself with. I don't know good English, I know bad English, and maybe not even some of that. So you've got to find some friends. You've got to find somebody willing to help you out in your project, or you've got to find somebody, if it's a commercial thing, you've got to find somebody who's willing to put up with how little you pay them, because it's not necessarily atrocious as well. So let them find you or mash this on keyboard. If you just want to test the design, if you actually, what you're doing is you're creating something, you want to submit it to OpenClipArt, or you're creating a comic, but you want the possibility for somebody else to translate this easily, which is very useful. If you're doing technical documentation, you have no intention of internationalizing, it doesn't mean you shouldn't make these considerations. You know, these are somewhere where someone might find your work later on, especially if you contribute it under an open license, and use it. You want to make it useful for them. Otherwise, your effort is duplication. It's just not fun for anybody. Okay, so you've translated the PO files, somebody's emailed them back, or they've checked them back in, or whatever method you use to actually, you'd be surprised how often I've stopped using the version control and just accepted emails and stuff because it's, you know, easier for people, it's lowering the bar and whatnot. Okay, so XML to PO will merge back all the files. We won't keep going into it. But that doesn't fix everything. There's still some abstractions that you're going to have to make. Like I said, there are design considerations across each language. Also, you might have something like a typeface with a very heavy weight, and you might want to have the Loki or something. The Devangari typeface that you have in free software is actually quite much thinner in its footprint. That it might not look good, and especially if you're doing something like, God forbid, a logo, but anything heavier than that, like a brand graphic, the first message on your website, or a splash screen of your project page. Splash screen is a great thing to translate because it makes people feel comfortable straight away with the application. Can't actually say I've ever done it, but it is great, I'm sure. Okay, so that's it for this part of the presentation. I'm going to go and show you some of the actual techniques in Inkscape for rigging this stuff up. When I mentioned the considerations, for changing the aesthetic, I'll show you the hacks. They're not very nice, but the mentality is always towards keeping this stuff workable from the single source, easy to translate. So, alright, let's open up Inkscape. Okay. So we're going to design something. Wow, this is a French keyboard. Who would have thought a French keyboard? So what's the word for delete?
Effacer.
I said that fine. Okay, so we're going to design perhaps some text. Perhaps there's another string of text, and perhaps another string of text.
Who here actually knows Esperanto? Who here was doing the card for learning to speak the other language? No. Did I say Esperanto?
Yeah.
No? No one does? I don't know, but it was kind of, I wish I could do a translation.
Cool. Okay. So you might have, you might actually start off with your Inkscape canvas and you've got, you know, your text here and you might want to change a bit of the aesthetic. One thing to take in note with XML to PO in particular is inline changes come out in the PO file, which means that if you've got inline changes, like you just made that text bold or you've colored it, you've created inline changes to the PO file inside that element you've got to span, and that will come out the element or end up there. And so that's maybe not the best approach to do. Sometimes it is, unfortunately, better to create a new whole new text object in Inkscape. Okay, so what we're then going to do, because this isn't very attractive text, is we're going to clone it. Keep it empty of style as an object, clone it so that we can create some more styles on top of it, and do whatever we want. Should we want a drop shadow? Should we want some beveling effects? Maybe add to a gradient or give it a reflection upon itself or some sort of weird stuff. You know, you are not really limited by anything but the source. So we're going to actually duplicate. Alt-D is the shortcut. V is the shortcut for flip. We're going to try and put a gradient on it, but notice nothing's happening. So what we're going to have to do is actually see, why is nothing happening? We've just created a clone of an object. This totally should be intended behavior. It's actually because style information is in the original. Now, whatever you put in the original piece of text, it stays there. It's, you know, the authoritative in this particular case. So we need to remove anything that isn't going to be used. If you open your XML, let's see, you actually see your text element here. We've got font size, font style, font weight. We've got a fill, a dirty button. It's filling the color, so it means that I can't change the color of any other clone I make of this object. We've got a fill opacity. I can't change the fill opacity either. I can't change the stroke opacity. I've got different stroke methods there for like line cut. I've even got the typeface. Now, I probably want to keep the typeface, and I probably want to keep the font size. Everything else, I do not want to keep. And that's that. So now that gradient is obviously applied in the clone. So now when we edit this text, obviously along comes the gradient. We can apply effects on top of that. Light flow. So we have this maintained width. But what about things that are more compelling? What about things where you've got a bit of offset, where you're going to have to use dynamic offset, or what actually going with that? What's best to do, rather than using this ever again, because you notice its position actually affects the clone in this case, because of the vertical flip, is to actually separate where you're going to use your active text and where you're going to use your design text. So your active text should be put off the canvas for now. Later on, if you're really into hacking your XML, you can go and put it in the definitions section of your SVG. That's the proper place to put it. But I prefer to keep it on off the canvas, because that way you can go back and change the text or just sample with your SVG. So we're going to delete everything. I'm going to create this Chrome file. I know you all want to eat lunch. Chill out. Okay. So now we're going to go through again. We're going to grab the style information that we want to keep. I want to keep the typeface. I want to keep the size. I don't want to keep absolutely anything else. I'm going to move this off canvas. And I'm going to duplicate it. Okay. So now what's the first thing I want to do? Well, I want to apply maybe a Chrome gradient to it. So if this is CBS, no, it's not. Okay. I can't add a stop, but I'll add the gradient here. I'm going nuts. Okay. So instead of a linear gradient, I'm actually going to create a radial just because I want to keep the idea that there's a horizon thing out there. Okay. So now I've got this text current. But wait, it kind of looks weird against that background. Where the area goes white, the character disappears. So I might want to have something behind it, like a soft shadow, just to give the idea. Well, I'm going to be able to duplicate this point because in the XML it's already referring back to the original text element I've got. And I can just change its style properties as well. So I'm going to change it to black, I'm going to feather it, change its opacity, and change the level. Okay, so because we're sort of stripped for time, I'm just going to show that yes, this stuff rule is in fact editable. Because I've designed the gradient to move along there, it stays in the correct place. Considerations like alignment also come into play. I'm just going to talk about some more of the considerations. So that's really great for doing a small button or a banner on a web page or something that you might need to create an active effect and keep it translated. But what about things where the translation is really quite long? Or somebody has given you a larger volume of text. Is that my mobile? No. Okay. Okay, so you're going to have to do some tricks. Optively, SVG is really not for large copy display. I honestly have gone through some very painful steps in publishing where doing press and using SVG for large bits of text, and it's just not good. Especially with translation, sometimes it's the only way to do it. But if you use the text tool, right now you can actually click and drag, and that creates a region for your text to go within. Actually, what it does in the real world is it actually creates the flow region, which is a shape. So this is a rect. We actually just created this shape in the SVG to contain your text. We can do the same thing with anything else. So if you've got, maybe you've done a design element and you want your text to flow around it, well, you're going to have to just go ahead and draw your shape, get your text, flow it into a frame. I know we have insert one on Ipsen and an extension, is that in 4.5? Okay. Okay, and you can turn off the formatting, of course, of this shape. But there's your text flowing around the frame. And the cool thing is, even though I've hidden that shape here, I'm not sure there's something on it. Yeah, your text lively flows around that area. So the problem is, if you tie your design too tight to that corner and you don't give enough space for it to flow underneath, the same thing happens with dynamic copy, you're going to miss out. You're going to have some text that goes invisible. So always watch out when you're using flow that you aren't very, that you must be very generous with a large amount of space. This must be very boring for a lot of people because this stuff, while it's the bane of my existence, it may not come up unless you're actually really trying to engineer this stuff. So I'm going to go on to something else. Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna manage it. Is that maximized? So we've covered flow text, we've covered the fact that you can translate a string of text. We're going to have to talk about areas of alignment, and then I'm going to talk about external styles, the pain that you have to go through. Okay. with setting a document's type and to print, so say you've got something like a brochure or something that contains a small volume of text but needs to be translated in a complex language, we're talking about getting solutions for things like Hindi, Bengali, Assamese, Gujarati, and all the rest of them into proper printed productions today. What you have to do is use Inkscape to set your text. Now, typesetting in Inkscape, it's not what the application was designed for. So you might have to do some manual tweaks or whatnot. But at the end of the day, to bring this stuff into a professional application that can manage your color and send it off as a PDF that's ready to be printed in a large, large volume, you're going to have to subset your text, which means after designing a bunch of text, you actually path, object, convert to path. So now we've got these editable vectors. You can imagine what this does to somebody trying to get a magazine professionally done in Devanagari. It's not cool. A few weeks ago, I had to do a 12 frame print handout insert. It's like just a little tiny brochure that explains some technical detail, but that was to be done in 11 Indic languages. And I've got to tell you, even on the nicest computer, you really hit a wall. But the fortunate thing is that we have this solution with Pangolin and Inkscape Canvas. I'm just saying that when it comes to doing some professional stuff, you might want to beg scribers to get Indic support. All right. So we've got the, there's one thing I've got to cover. Okay, so we've got the option of being able to create a column of text. We've got the ability to create effects off an unstarred column, so you have to actually remove this star. This is something that, to a limited capacity, we offer in Inkscape. We've got these two buttons here, the unstarred and the unstarred for both your stroke and your fill. That does unset the property stroke and fill in the XML, and it's an easy way to just change things based on your clone. But what you're going to have to do for larger things, like your stroke width or your other types of style information, is still absolutely remove them. One thing that is hard to grasp, but we've covered clipping a whole lot, is that if you want to do an internal effect on a shape, say you would like a glow within this area, is to duplicate that shape, create a stroke that's nice and white. We're actually going to make it pink or something so you can tell from the difference in the background. Okay, lower it. Three. And then place this behind this shape, duplicate the shape because you want it to be set as a background, and then actually I'm going to do a little bit of an offset. But set that as a clipping path. Now what that's done is that's actually created a shape where this effect can only appear within. And this is still dynamic, so you can actually get your bevel effects happening live, which is really cool. So if we wanted to go through and deal with some of the nuances of that chrome effect, you might want to actually have a bit of foggy interference around the edges of the shape to infer that it's actually rounding a corner without actually having to mess the gradient handles around the edge, where you can do that. You've just got to make sure that you duplicate your original path, which is your text, and then clip it against whatever effect you want to do. Mostly that's blurring a stroke. Sometimes it's only doing a bit of a gradient from top down. So if you wanted to create a white highlight, inside of the first of these, you're going to have to once again duplicate this. My trick for easy selection is actually just lower the level of the vanilla shape object, but set. And there you go, you've got this effect only happening within, and then you've got that. So there's a lot of consideration to get some of these implemented as live effects and whatnot with my extremely limited Python hacking ability, but
That right now the focus is to get compelling designs in dynamic sets of text. But what you're going to have to consider again is the aesthetics of different languages, what they prefer to see. Maybe there's a palette change to happen, and how do we do this in an automated fashion? So we can't, once you commit to this sort of change, you're no longer going to be able to open your file within Inkscape. It'll be able to be rendered for BTK or RSVG, but reopening to edit, so if you're thinking of the publishing workflow that we covered earlier, it's sort of one-way street, rather than, in this case, even though it's considered fuzzy, a language translator can go in and open up the resulting SVG file. If you've made a mistake in the design, fix up some of the problems, and then that SVG file can go through. They've intercepted it at that level. We'll no longer be able to do that. Once it's generated, that's it. So what you actually do, and RSVG and BTK support this, is import an external style sheet. So inside the language directory you have, you just create a new directory, which is like JA_JP. You have style.css, and in that CSS file you refer to what maybe your palette is for that particular language, or maybe what your stroke preferences are. Now the nifty thing about setting stroke on text, now I know that anyone who's a professional typographer will hate this, it's faux bold, but you need to do faux bold to get balanced weight across an entire set of text. So you might have, okay, I know the typeface that I'm using for my simplified Chinese, and I know that it needs 0.2 of stroke for faux bold, just to get it up to the weight of my English text, and you know, you'll set that as a specific style for all text parts within your style sheet. And this stuff is great, it's a nifty feature to have. We won't have it for a while yet in Inkscape, but when it is, it'll be brilliant. And I'm really hungry, so I'm gonna take questions now and then we'll bugger off. Okay, no questions? You're all really starving? All right, I got one question.
I just wanted to point out, what Andy was talking about adding index script to describe this.
Oh, that's easier. One of the things Andy was talking about was adding support for index complex scripts in Scribus. It's on the roadmap, it's highly desired, and it's a huge job to be able to support complex scripts. And already Andreas Fox is working with the folks from Ango and working on HarfBuzz to be able to do that, because the requirements are far more complex than Latin or even Cyrillic or even Chinese and CJK languages.
That's true. And if anyone wants to implement Hieroglyph font selection in Fault, come see me for a bounty. Because when it comes to having a declarative language per declarative font per locale, but you've got mixed English and indic typefaces, you have a problem where the English isn't rendered because the typeface isn't working with scripts in that case. And then there's even worse problems where the font is so nice to include Roman characters that match the aesthetic, but those characters aren't in. Those characters aren't in the brand of whatever you're trying to do, so you want to actually overwrite. If it's a Roman character, if it belongs to this, I don't care what the locale is, yeah, if you can implement that in FOP, you know, that would rock. That's my Andy Gunn for this talk, so thank you. Let's grab some food.